at January 24th, 1989. President is represented as Sponholz, Lehman, Boyer, and Donnelly. And first matter on the agenda is House Bill 61, and we have a representative here of the administration to speak to us about this, but just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Judy Knight, and I am Deputy Director for the Employment Security Division, Department of Labor. House Bill 61 was introduced by the governor at the request of the Governor's Committee on the Employment of the Handicapped. The bill makes virtually one major change, and that is changing the name of the committee from the Governor's Committee on Employment of the Handicapped to the Governor's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities. And it does that throughout the governing statutes. And then it also makes a technical change in the appointment in the term of the chair as opposed to the chairman, which I'm sure is some language from past years. And then it also changes the date for the week when the governor usually issues a proclamation emphasizing employment of People with Disabilities Week to coincide with the national emphasis, which is during the month of October.
Are there questions for the witness?
Or motions?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we pass out House Bill number 61 from committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Compelling.
Yes. The next bill on the agenda is House Bill 82, which is a committee bill. Olivia Sakaris. This is the FOB Alaska bill, which passed the House last year. This was a committee bill. We'll give you some history on this one. This was a committee bill last year. Passed the House. I think it passed several Senate committees also. And I think it made it all the way to Senate Rules Committee last year and died in the last day. Simply states that unless there's a good reason for it, that the delivery point of supplies purchased by the state should be in Alaska. The reason for it was a committee during intern hearings 2 years ago heard a bunch of testimony from businesses, Alaska businesses, that were concerned that the delivery points of supplies contracts were in Seattle, and that necessitated them to bid on actually transporting supplies from Alaska to Seattle to be purchased by the state and transported back to Alaska. So we said that unless there was a real good reason why they wanted the delivery point to be in Seattle, something to do with Marine Highway or something, that the delivery point should be designated within the state of Alaska. And the administration testified that, well, we're trying to do this already, but the testimony from the public was that, well, we're convinced that we need a statute to really send a message that we want this done. So we went ahead and introduced the bill. It passed the House and made it through several Senate committees. I think Senate rules. Right. So, there's no member of the public. There's only from the Department of Administration. There's somebody available if needed. Mr. Link is available.
Sounds perfectly reasonable.
What's the will of the committee? Ready to discussion, Representative Lee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass the bill with individual recommendations.
Okay. Are there any objections to the motion? Hearing no objection, motion carries. Okay. Do we have a draft yet?
We do not.
Last one? Okay. And we'll just discuss it with the committee. The third bill we had is House Bill 71, which is the elevator safety bill. Apparently, in examining this, we identified some concern that we wanted to make sure that the new safety code. By adoption of a new safety code, we wouldn't be requiring existing elevators to be modified. We just wanted to apply to elevators from this point on and adopt it. And there is Randy Carr from the Department of Labor here to testify. Would you like to? We have a committee substitute on the way over that would provide for that change. Mr. Carr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Randy Carr, the Deputy Director of the Labor Standards and Safety Division of the Department of Labor. We don't really have a lot to say about this bill. I certainly have information to provide to the committee if there are questions, but we do support the legislation. It's primarily updating existing codes, which we have in statute, to comply with current national standards. that are developing in the lower 48. We currently have the 84 edition adopted, and we're attempting to update that to adopt the 87 edition. The other substantial change involves the door opening restriction, which the committee substitute will be addressing to make very clear that that is intended to address the new installations only.
Questions, Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought that having the bill before us provided a good forum for discussion of something that had been brought to my attention late in the year by a constituent, actually a constituent of Representative Miller's from North Pole, who happens to be in the elevator business. He's a contractor, and what he indicated to me was that there are no uniform standards either nationally or and not in the state of Alaska that apply to handicapped standards, elevator standards for handicapped access, and what that has meant is that you have each municipal government that have inspection systems or inspectors, that they have their own codes, their own provisions for what kind of lifts they will and won't allow for access for handicapped people. And he said that in Fairbanks, we don't have a particular problem with that, but that in doing business with the municipality of Anchorage, that there have been problems, that there's an inconsistent application, and they, I think, sell some kind of a manual lift so that the handicapped person, I'm not sure exactly what the nature of their machine or whatever it does, but that it's a very inexpensive lift specifically for handicapped access, and that in some cases the code in Anchorage, I guess the code in Anchorage does require an elevator, period, doesn't allow for this lesser device to be utilized for handicapped access, and so it was a dollars and cents issue on one level, and clearly the contractor's interested in selling his wares, and I was curious whether or not you have any comments on that or any recommendations.
Well, I don't think I'm prepared to comment on it without discussing it with some of my elevator people. I would note that the inconsistency can only occur with the municipality of Anchorage because we only have two jurisdictions for inspection, and that's the state and the municipality. The municipality of Anchorage being the only other body that does its own elevator inspections, we have all other jurisdictions.
So within that, Mr. Chairman, within the balance of state, then, the code is flexible enough that it allows for anything, I mean, either an elevator or some other kind of lift device for handicapped access, specifically?
My understanding is the elevator code, if a lift is being used, it sets minimum standards for that lift, but there's no prohibition in the code.
Eileen, could you just identify yourself for the record?
Eileen Clay, Department of Labor.
And then, Mr. Chairman, finally, there is or is not, to your knowledge, some kind of a prohibition to using lifts in Anchorage's code for carrying the mayor?
I'm not familiar with the Anchorage code.
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure that this is vehicle to address that. Clearly, they have a municipal code, and I think that more to bring the issue to the attention of the committee and members from Anchorage who might be interested in. When we look at adding dollars, and we spend millions of dollars every year through DOT's budget, the University of Alaska's budget, and other, and generally state capital budget, and providing for handicapped access, and it may be one of those issues that people from Anchorage might be interested in pursuing as a cost-saving measure. I'm not sure. Thank you.
The record should reflect I've been joined by Representative Greenberg and Representative Collins. Does Anchorage receive any state money to do its elevator safety enforcement, or does it do that?
No, it's merely an enforcement jurisdiction. We don't fund their inspections.
Okay. And it's unique. I remember that was about 3 years ago that they assumed that responsibility.
They have a fee schedule, just like we do with the inspections.
Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the rate of elevators getting stuck in this sort of thing?
As pertains to this legislation?
No, just
general. Elevators getting stuck. Well, in Anchorage, my personal experience hasn't been any representation of elevator problems at all, but I too lived in Juneau for a while and I realized that's a larger problem down here. I'd have to check with my elevator inspectors to find out if there's any sort of statistics statewide about getting stuck. I'm not even sure that that's a statistic that's reported to us. is we perform annual inspections. If there are maintenance problems during the course of the year between the inspections, those will be reported to the company who maintains services the elevator, and I believe we receive that.
Well, within the realm of your expertise, within the realm of your inspections, do you find that there are problems with elevators in the state?
I don't think that I can answer that right now. I'd have to go back and talk to the elevator inspectors and find out exactly what sort of statistical evidence they have for or against that representative.
Maybe that could be responded to in writing.
Certainly.
Could you just furnish the committee with a response and we'll furnish it to the members?
Certainly. I'd be happy to.
Representative Spahnholz.
Excuse my ignorance if this is an ignorant question, but I'm interested in why we would update from 1987 as opposed to 1984 to 1987 rather than use the most currently published set of standards by the American Institute for Safety.
I believe that is the most currently published set.
Right, but the bill says 1987, which means we'll change this again in 1989 or 1990 when the next book comes out. Is there a reason for doing that? That's my question.
Eileen?
There is a reason for that.
Okay.
My understanding is it's involves the delegation of the legislature to future legislators, committing them to something, plus a policy. From a policy standpoint,
okay,
it would be adopting something that none of us know what it is.
I see.
That's interesting. I never thought of the constitutional delegation of authority
problem.
Right. I raised that question. I would like to see whether that could be done with the proviso that the any future legislature, of course, could amend it not to do it in a given case, or to require that the department, when a new version of the standards comes out, reports any issues of concern. I would not necessarily assert that that would be unconstitutional, unless you have a legal opinion that says it would be.
I mean, that's what we have been told, because we certainly, have felt too that, aside from the policy standpoint of sitting here and say, let's adopt something that nobody in this room knows what it is, it certainly would be easier to say this is what the standard is going to be. It's going to be the National Elevator Code in the most current edition. But our directors have told us, no, the legislature can't do that. I certainly, and I'm not going to try to defend that. I'm just telling you what we've been told.
If we simply said we didn't specify an edition, then I think it would probably be read as the most current edition. I would, Mr. Chairman, I would like to get a legal opinion on whether we can do that.
Sure, I've got no problem with that. Why don't, what I would request from the department is that the drafters that you've worked with, could you ask them to give us something in writing on why they feel that way? And then we'll have my staff request from our drafters an opinion also. And then we'll drop those in front of the committee, because this is the committee that deals with a lot of these renewals of building standards and building codes. So it'd be good for us to know for the future.
It would seem to me that a way of doing that, simply, that I think would be constitutional, if no other, would be to say that that the most recent version is adopted. However, that the date of adoption would be, let us say, the 1st of April. And as soon as this comes out, at the beginning of the session, the department would synopsize for the legislature any major changes. And that would give the legislature a certain period of time to disapprove. It's somewhat similar to what we do with executive orders. It would flip it around and would say that if, let us say in 1991, a new edition of these standards comes out, then on the first day of the 1992 legislative session, the department, that these would automatically become effective April 1st, 1992, unless the legislature disapproved them, and that the department would, at the first day of the 1992 legislative session, would submit a report to the Speaker and a report to the President of the Senate, just synopsizing any major changes, and then the legislature would basically have 3 months to disapprove them. If they didn't, they'd automatically go into effect. We wouldn't have to keep passing new laws.
Like a sunset provision.
Yeah.
Representative Lehman?
Are you suggesting this for all types of codes in the building industry?
No.
Just this particular one?
Yeah, because I don't know enough about the others.
You know a lot about this one?
More than I know about the others, but that doesn't say very much.
I was just wondering if anybody does, because I haven't read the 87 code or the 84 code that I can recall. And I was just wondering if anybody here has.
I'm willing to put it on record that I haven't, and I don't intend to.
I understand
that. It's not his job.
Yeah. I understand this is a subject that has its ups and downs.
Staff, we will. If the department can give us a response from their drafters, we'll get an opinion from our drafters, and we'll furnish those to the committee. Explore this whole subject, because Representative Greenberg's right, it comes up over and over again.
I have a question, Mr. Carr.
Certainly.
Are you aware of any controversy or any comments at all from people in the elevator industry regarding the new code and the application of it?
Not with regard to the code as a whole, no. We've received some comments regarding the individual change on the doors, but not on the code as a whole.
Which we've is proposed that we will accommodate with this new section 3.
Yes.
Otherwise, the changes are either editorial or fairly minor, or they're the types of changes in the code that industry accepts. And is.
Yes, I'm not aware of any opposition to the adoption of the new code.
Mr. Carr, typically, the way these seems to work is that you've got an 87 code, the industry would gear up for it, and I would assume that most of the new elevators produced or being distributed in the United States would comply with that code, not the 84 code. So it's probably a good thing to move update, because there may seem some conflict there also, so there's good public policy, just from a product's manufacturing point of view. Well, we do have a proposed committee substitute that, have you had a chance to examine the committee substitute? Does the department say it's okay?
Mr. Chairman, I would move for adoption of the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 71 Lingering Congress.
I'm going to object, because we're going to get this legal opinion, and we may decide to do this in a different manner once we get the legal opinion. If we can do it without having to do it every couple of years and be able to on a permanent basis. So I would ask that we defer this until we get the legal opinion and bring it back and see what kind of language we want to have.
Well, if you feel really strongly about that, I guess I'd comply with that wish.
It's up to you, Mr. Chairman. I would think that you may be able to get out of having to update elevator codes every 3 years and get a good legal opinion.
Well, my thinking was that we've got a good bill in and of itself here. We don't know the answer to those questions, and we don't even know if that's the policy we want to adopt as to this particular piece of legislation. If we obtain that information, we can certainly forward it on to the Senate, or counterparts in the Senate, when they consider the legislation, because it's going to have to move over there. That's sort of...
This is going to go pretty quickly, don't you?
If you feel real strongly,
I think we might want to take a look at this, and it may be something that we can do in this and other areas to save us having to go through these minor bills every. This is the second time that we've done this since Virginia and I have been here.
Okay. Well, request to Representative Greenberg, we'll hold the bill over. I hope you all don't have to come back again. I really hate to have you keep coming to these meetings and say the same things. So, we'll...
Mr. Chairman, I formally withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Okay, it's now close enough to 3:30. I'm going to take up House Bill 5, the Opportunity for Correctional Industries Commission. Is there a new list? Has anyone signed up from the public on House Bill 5? How about somebody from Representative Swackhammer's office? Anybody from Representative Swackhammer's office? Are they outside? Greg, if somebody doesn't know what you're doing, you want to ask them? You want to come in? Thanks. This is a piece of legislation that passed the House last year and was on the calendar of the Senate to be taken up. I think it was the next bill to be taken up in the adjournment. Well, we'll go ahead and take the bill up and then because I know much about it. Oh, good. Okay, so you're going to be Wendy, right? Okay. So the bill passed the House last year. It adds a, I'm going to defer to Representative Grunberg because he has experience in drafting legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill was really drafted last year at the behest of the members of the Finance Corrections Subcommittee, which Representative Swackhammer chaired and Representative Ridger and I sat on. And this was to deal with the problem of who would make up the membership of the Correctional Industries Commission. That's the commission that is in charge of the Correctional Industries Program. And the question was, since there are some unions that are building trades and some that are service industries, and their interests are not always the same, under present law, there is only one member of organized labor on this particular commission, and that may not always give the most balanced approach. As a result, we suggested and drafted legislation to increase the members from 7 to 8, and that the additional member would be appointed by the governor, and the additional member would be a union person. And the one union person would be from the building trades, and one would be from the service industries, the laundry workers, bakers, etc. And the rest of these amendments on the bill are simply conforming amendments, and sections 3 and 4 deal with the term of the existing labor representative, and that they would serve out the remainder of their term, and the new person would take office after the governor designated whether the presently existing member is a service representative or building trades. And as soon as that designation is made, then the governor would appoint the other person as the other union representative, and that the term would be set by the governor, but not to extend past June 30, 1991. And this bill was originally incarnated as a House Bill 473, and it passed the House last year 38-0 and passed in the Senate all the various committees. No significant opposition, and wound up on the calendar, the second supplemental calendar in the Senate, but they ran out of time. And there's a zero fiscal note that goes with the bill, and it's supported by the administration and by labor, and will hopefully resolve a thorny question. And I hope the members support it.
Representative Swackhammer, if you want to join us at the table. I think if you want to come up here, you can have a seat here, because Representative Boyer's had it leave. Representative Grunberg just ran through a synopsis of the legislation, basically, so we had an overview. Are there questions from committee members of the prime sponsor or Representative Grunberg? Representative Lehman?
I've worked some with corrections, and I just want to make sure I understand what the commission does. Correctional Industries gets involved in various activities. Factual plans, I know, and some other things, and I assume this commission guides these activities. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. What they try to do is guide them and steer them to keep them out of private enterprise and to make sure that the goals of what they're trying to do with the industry program, you know, for the offender as well as for the institution as well as originally intended. The oversight of the management.
Representative Swackhammer, my understanding is there's currently a statutory or is it a regulatory guidance that says that the correctional industry shouldn't conflict with existing private industry?
I think that's in statute.
It's in statute?
Yeah. I believe. I'd have to check.
I see Mr. Link nodding his head. That's correct.
Statute.
And I think the commission helps give guidance to compliance with that statute.
And the correctional industry receives money for its services. What happens to that money? Is it in the general fund?
Yeah, it receives money to operate, and then they sell their products and services, and that money goes into the general fund. And then there are appropriations. It receives money from the general fund, and the money that it earns goes into the general fund.
Maybe someone can explain why, if we add one person to a commission, which increases the expenses, we come up with a zero fiscal number.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what has been explained to me is that they're going to cover the cost through the program receipts. And that basically there would be very little added cost in terms of meetings and those types of things.
Mr. Chairman, I do not recall.
Representative Grimmel.
Thank you. I don't believe that these members of the commission get paid, do they? I think they may travel in per diem. Correct me if I'm wrong. So there's not, you're not paying a salary or anything, it's just minimal travel.
Chairman, my comment on this is directed, you know, basically for all the commissions that we're going to be reviewing is we're at a time when we need to be looking to decrease our costs. And if the seven-person commission can't do this work, we're adding one more and adding costs. We're going the wrong direction. And I would think that these other trades could give input to the members who are on the commission. It's just a way of saving public dollars. I think we're being unwise. I think we need to be wise stewards of our public monies, even if it comes from program receipts.
Any further questions of the principals or discussion, Representative Grunzer?
Yeah, I would generally tend to agree, but I think this is fairly small, and the input is very important to the proper functioning of the Correctional Industries Commission. Without broad-based support, the program will die. And in order to assure that the program remains viable, it's really important to have these people involved. And the small amount that we spend in travel per diem for this one additional person may make the difference between whether the program remains viable or not, or whether it's a serious problem. And this will help ensure that the program remains as healthy as possible. And I think that the small additional expenditure will pay off for the state in this particular case.
Representative Swackhammer, then Representative Lehman.
Let me try to put it in another perspective and give you some historical perspective. That there is a considerable amount of money and time placed into some of the industry programs, i.e. laundry, bakeries, the service industry, in which ended up being a conflict, where it's our feeling that had a person from the service industry been represented at the time that these programs were presented, that we would have alleviated a lot of those problems, thus saving quite a bit of money at the time and effort. And I think for the small amount of money, and we're not even seeing a fiscal note as compared to the problems that you're going to solve down the road are going to be immense. And if you take a look at the building trades is represented, but the services trades is not. And the services trades are the ones that we've run into the most difficulty in trying to keep them out of private enterprise. So that's what we're trying to accomplish here. We're actually trying to save money in the long run, as much as possible.
Representative Lehman.
Yeah, my comment was going to be, have we had controversy, recent controversy that has precipitated this? I think you've answered that. But I have a list, doesn't have to be today, of the members on that commission right now, of who's on it. So
I think we've got that.
Yeah, okay.
Representative Swackhammer's going to be in your office. Yeah, there has been recent controversy, Representative. I'm aware of two industries, bakery and laundry, that have been very controversial the last several years, and they're both service industry stuff. Is there any member of the public here to testify on this legislation? I don't know if anybody's signed up. No one to testify. Is there further committee discussion? If there's no discussion, the chair would entertain a motion.
I'll move the bill with individual recommendations.
Okay. Is there any objection? Any no objection? Legislation, motion carries. Thank you, Representative Stackhammer. If you could give us a copy of what you furnished Representative Lehman, also would appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
We're moving right along.
Well, yeah, we're ahead of schedule. I'll take the opportunity here where we have a little hiatus. I'd like to talk about some proposed committee bills. So we'll go to two bills I'd like to bring up for the committee's consideration. I don't expect to ask the committee to take a position on these bills today, but just to have them on the table to talk about for the next several weeks. First of all is the proposed pay on time bill, which extends requirements that the legislature adopted several years ago as to the state, which requires the state of Alaska to pay its contractors outstanding balances within 30 days or after 30 days. And we've had requests over the last several years from small businesses that we expand that requirement to include local governments and state school districts. This was with committee legislation last year. There was some opposition presented by local governments. And I'm not sure what was the final status of this legislation last year. House Finance Committee. There was a spirited discussion in Committee Regional Affairs, which I assume it would go to also this year, about its impact on local governments. The state version of it's been a big success. It's actually, small businesses are getting paid on time now by the state government, where for a long time they were suffering big gaps in the time which they were actually due, because it was very difficult to force the state to pay. It's just an extension of what has been a successful program. So we're just like to place that on the table for the committee to think about. And if you have questions, contact staff here or myself, and can just consider it. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, I'd like to see a copy of it. I certainly will get a copy of the bill before putting it in.
You were provided with all the files yesterday, I think.
Where's it?
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't delivered to your office ahead of time.
No, this is proposed legislation.
It should be. Here's an extra.
Yeah. I just would have one question.
Mm-hmm.
If it deals with education, both the House and the House, and then it's Community Regional Affairs, I guess.
It did go to House last week.
There's nothing now that requires that employees, I guess, that.
All right, so I'd just like to put that out for the committee to consider, and if you have questions, contact staff, and it's just something I wanted to have on the table first to think about introducing. And another good contact person would be lobbyists for the National Federation of Independent Businessmen and Small Business. I think that's the Sullivan Group this year they'd be good to check with for general information about these kind of statutes. And I imagine the Department of Administration, too, could give you some feedback about how the pay-on-time statute works with the state.
Perhaps also Municipal League. Have they stated that it's positions? Are you aware?
Last year, I think they were opposed to it, and I'm just trying to get my recollection here going from the Committee of Regional Affairs last year.
If I could continue, one of the problems that we've had with municipalities is their scheduling of city council meetings and getting quorums, especially in smaller communities, and sometimes their rules are set up that the council has to approve payments, especially over a certain size. And we've had trouble in the past in my business of pushing something through in 30 days, just because of that. And I don't know if the pay and time provisions, I didn't study them, allow for that. But that could be a challenge that we may want to address, or at least somehow provide for that.
Yeah, I think that certainly is a challenge. That's one of the major concerns of small business, is that with the smaller communities, sometimes they're in limbo for 6 months or 9 months waiting for the products they've already delivered to be paid for, and they're out of their inventory now, and they had to put the cash up front to provide that out of their inventory. I'm certainly interested in addressing this because I think it's a real serious issue for business in the state. And if there's some compromise you can reach with the municipalities, so there's some provisions for when they have, difficult coordination problems like that, I'm certainly really open to that. But I'd really like to see us address the issue and try to reach some sort of assistance for our small businesses. Right.
Yeah, it just occurs to me, having experience with this in daycare, the pass-through funding goes to the municipality for daycare assistance. Sometimes those payments are held up for 60 and 90 days. It's a marginal industry anyways, economically. That's devastating, and that would really help. That maybe needs to be discussed in passed through.
I guess I will say what I was going to say. There's no requirement now that any contractor who receives money from the government, whether it's state or, in this case, local or school district, must pay its employees properly. Mm-hmm.
Wage
amount.
Wage amount.
I don't think the state's exempt from the wage and hour provisions. Maybe everybody from labor left already, I think, but I don't know.
Exempt employees in the state. Other state employees are covered by wage and hour.
Because I would hate to see company X get the money and then just hold on to it and not promptly pay their employees.
Can't do that.
Representative Collins.
Can't do that. Which mayor won't let you do that. There are specific requirements on time payments. Not only wages, but bonuses and overtime and all those kinds of things.
Okay, well, the second.
Do you want a motion to put that?
Well, I didn't want to. I didn't want to ask the committee to do that unless the committee really wants to at this point in time. I just wanted to put it on the table for something for us to think about. And also because I think this starts the public information process, and maybe people will give you some feedback. Yeah, the opportunity to talk to some people, see how people feel. The next piece of legislation I'd like to place on the table is proposal for a phase out of the Alaska Power Authority. And once again, I'm just putting this out for purposes of discussion. This is basically a 5-year plan to phase out Alaska Power Authority as an agency and transfer their crucial functions to other parts of the administrative branch of government. It would not eliminate the power cost equalization program. Its administration is simply shifted. And there's a memorandum that accompanies it. It's not intended to make any substantive changes in the existing functions of APA. It's simply intended to dissolve them as an agency. Certainly was one of the impressions I've received in the past 2 years working with the Department of Commerce's budget, that most of the functions of APA could be performed within another administrative organization, and many of them could be performed preferably by the private sector, and that there certainly is an argument that Alaska doesn't need an independent power authority to perform those functions. And So we worked putting this bill together last year, towards the end of last year. I simply wanted to bring it up to the committee for their comments and suggestions. Having on the table, of course, is simply the discussion. So, once again, I'm not seeking to try to introduce this bill at this particular time. I just want to put it on the table for members to become familiar with and develop some sort of thoughts about it, if they had suggestions.
Did the bill move out of
the bill was not introduced last year. It was never introduced. It was very late in the second year of this, that legislature when we managed to develop the legislation. Because the APA has so many ongoing contractual obligations, phasing them out is a very difficult proposition, as you can see. It's a 31-page bill. Of course, there's new initiatives have been presented by the APA to try to put them in government for all time, forever. Apparently, there's proposals coming in that take the income stream from the four dam pool directly into APA and use it as program receipts. I'm very concerned about those proposals because that removes that income stream from our jurisdiction, our regulation. And of course, we've had the problem with the agency in the past. They haven't followed their intent language, legislative intent language. They haven't complied with their personnel line items for shifting money out of capital projects to pay for their personnel. And then last year when they usurped the budget process by adding $120,000 into the reappropriations bill to pay for their personnel. The agency seems to be out there and seems to sometimes consider itself its own independent little part of state government, not responsible to anybody else. And I think it's certainly something we should discuss, whether there's any merit even having them around. And especially if they're going to behave in that particular manner in the budget process. So anyhow, I just want to put it on the table for discussion by the committee and just a general thought.
Mr. Chairman, if there are instances where this particular agency has not followed the legislative intent, would it be appropriate to ask, first of all, House Research to provide for this committee a list of all legislative intent language with respect to this particular agency and provide copies of the legislation? So in other words, you would have a list of 10 or 15, whatever it is, items of legislative intent that have been passed by the legislature over the last, say, 10 years. Then once we have that in hand, right by official motion, this would be by official motion of the committee, write to the agency and say, attached is a list of all legislative intent language involving your agency. Please respond in writing fully in the necessary schedule of hearing, showing your compliance with each of these legislative intent language.
Yeah, we can certainly try that.
That has nothing to do with it, but that will certainly get them here and get them doing it in writing.
Well,
put them right under the gun and let them know that we intend to do this and hold their feet to the fire.
To give you an idea of the time reference, from serving the last 2 years on the budget subcommittee that was responsible for APA, information we asked for 2 years ago we're just now starting to receive from the agency. And it basically had to do with a budget and audit report that said they had numerous positions that were two steps over people doing that same responsibility in state government. And in response to that, they have resisted any adjustment of those salaries, and we just received on eight of those positions.
Get us a written report and schedule up a hearing.
Okay. We'll give it a try. So, we'll leave this on the table for people to consider, and I'm sure you'll be getting visited in often by...
I'll make that a request, and so we have it on the record. The staff get from House Research all legislative intent language for, let's say, I don't know how long APA is going to exist, of course, in the last 5 years. And number two, that staff get a list of all correspondence from any from this committee or the finance subcommittee over the last 2 years. And if we could get that within a week or so, then put it on the agenda next week, and then take up an official motion and ask for them to respond in writing and in a hearing. So we know we're not going to.
I think it's going to take at least 2 weeks, maybe more, but we'll certainly endeavor to do that.
Can I qualify that? Certainly. Do you want a list of all correspondence that deals with budget questions?
Anything that you feel, Mr. Chairman, that they may not have responded to. So we'll have on the table here, this is an exact list of the stuff, and there's some questions, at least in my mind, where they have responded to it, and we'll just send a cover letter and attach these to it. Mm-hmm. Find out.
And I think this is going to dovetail well in the committee's request that we look into the Department of Commerce's budget request also, because APA is a big part of that budget, and there's been a very controversial interrelationship with the operating budget of APA and their project funding.
And Mr. Chairman, when we do have the hearing, I would suggest at that time we vote a concession to that, day to that, and entitlement also oversight of the APA and also discussion of potential committee bill that pays APA out.
Okay. Sounds like a good suggestion, and we'll try to generate that information in some sort of a digestible summary, because it's going to be quite extensive, and it's a very complicated procedure we've been through with their budget questions the last several years too. Which is one of the areas of frustration, the way they've successfully moved money around to avoid legislative budget attacks.
And it will require more than work.
Okay. About 3 minutes before we're going to take up the Executive Order 74. And before that, we have one bill remaining on the table, potential piece of committee legislation from last week. And that's the underground utility bill. I'd like the members that had the opportunity to review that legislation, had any suggestions, or if there were no problems with it, then maybe we could move ahead in areas of community piece of legislation.
When I was in Anchorage last weekend, one of the constituents who came to the meeting works for the municipality of Anchorage and expressed concern about that bill, said that they would be preparing testimony, I believe, what they said. At any rate, there is opposition to it that he expressed. I just want to bring that out. It has mostly to do with the expense, and I don't know if there's some things we could do to the bill to reduce that expense, but I wanted to at least pass that comment on here to let you know that there would be, you know, at least some people opposed to it.
Right, and I think that's accurate. I think we can expect that there would be opposition based on cost. At the same time, I'm real open to adjusting the dedicated amount of funds going towards the burying of existing overground cables to make it acceptable, so that we don't put an undue burden on utilities and make the cost much more. I'm real open to that. Were there any particular suggestions? I understand that Anchorage has a municipal ordinance that requires this at the existing time, but they don't comply with it.
Because of the expense.
Yeah. Yeah, but they never take the ordinance off the books. Right? Yeah.
He mentioned that he said that they are even, this was a fellow who was in Public Works, even talking about requesting that Anchorage modify its existing ordinance.
I think their ordinance is 5%.
I think so. I don't remember what the amount is, but it's...
I'd be real open to an amount less than that. That's what we're proposing. But I'd be very open to an amount less than that. I would like to see, even if it's a 1% or 2%, I think it'd be a good program to have in place. And if we can get it down to an acceptable level where it's not a burden on the utilities, I still think that I do have a lot of merit.
I don't have the copy of the bill in front of you. I think the cutoff was 69 kV, and I just, that's a big line. And it's expensive to underground a line of that size. A lot more expensive to underground.
My concern would be that it would have an impact on the consumers, and that
we might see an increase in cost of services in order to offset that 1% or 2%, something like that.
Okay, Representative Lehman, if you've got somebody you're working with on this, do you think you could get them to give us some, could you coordinate with them to give us some remarks or suggestions on the draft? And then we could think about it some more before we put it in, maybe, and get some ideas from them?
I'll drop a draft of it in the mail to them and just ask them to comment on it.
Okay.
We have plenty
of time. And when you do that, if you could express to them that we're real open about this, we want their suggestions on on how to achieve the public policy goal of eventually getting these lines buried, at the same time do it in a viable, economically sound manner. That'd be really appreciated. Okay, well, it's 4:00 now, and I'd like to take up Executive Order 74, which is the executive order transferring functions of regulating charitable gaming from revenue to Department of Commerce. Mr. Kettle, are you here representing the department?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to testify on Executive Order 74?
I'll make a brief statement.
Okay. We also have Jeff Bush kind of here. Did you want to join us too? Can you lock in my pass? Because I'm sure there's going to be some questions.
My name is Steve Kettle. I'm Director of Income and Excise Audit Division for the Department of Revenue, currently in charge of the charitable gaming program for the state.
Mr. Kettle, I just want to ask you, I'm just curious. I had you on for 4:00 today, and when I put that on the schedule, I stick to that because I don't want some member of the public coming in finding we've started a hearing. So in the future, if there isn't anything else you're interested in, you could stay in your office till it's time for, it's on the schedule, and you might, because I know this is, when we're in town, it's real inconvenient for you. You always got to come down here and hang out and wait, and so I really try to make your job easier by scheduling things at a specific time as much as possible. So I think you can be real sure that we're going to stick to that. You may be later than that, but at no time will you be earlier than that, because I wouldn't want any lack of public notice.
I appreciate that comment, and it certainly would make my job across the street a lot, giving a little more time to do the job. You have in front of you Executive Order Number 74. This order would transfer the operation of charitable gaming from the Department of Revenue to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, effective July 1st, 1989. The reason for this change, that the department and I think the entire administration agrees that the gaming program is more regulatory in nature than would normally fit in a revenue agency. We believe this transfer will enhance better efficiency in the operation of the Department of Revenue. It will allow me to focus on what I consider the highest priority for the audit agency, that is to bring in the revenues that operate state government. There's amending legislation with this executive order that amends the statute specifying which department is responsible for the program. The Department of Revenue will transfer through a budget amendment the necessary resources for the Department of Commerce to carry on the function of operating the games of chance and skill. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer or Jeff, you have a statement.
Mr. Chairman, Jeff Bush, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce and Economic Development. I just would like to speak in support of the executive order as well. The Department of Commerce and Economic Development is prepared to take on this program. I think it's worth clarifying, in light of my testimony from last week on another bill, the Department of Commerce and Economic Development supports the transfer of the program to our department. The only issue we have is once we receive it, how is it going to be administered within our department? And that's a separate issue completely. I concur with Mr. Kettle's comments that it makes sense to have it within our department. And so that's why I'm also in favor of the executive order.
Do I understand by your testimony there's going to be some legislation introduced to change statutes also? Or was I confused, or did I hear something there that wasn't there?
As part of the executive order, it changes the statutes.
Okay.
How I meant to get that across.
Okay. So basically what we have here is under the Constitution, the governor has the power to organize the administrative, the executive branch of government, and they're not making any substantive changes in this reorganization, just strictly a organizational change.
Correct.
Correct? Okay. Representative Collins?
Basically, I was just going to say that the resources are going to be transferred to the department, so that you'll be losing some resources and some staff, and that staff is going to be transferred to the department.
Mr. Chairman? Yes, that's correct. We're transferring 7 positions that currently make up the gaming positions that we have available for the program, along with that contractual supplies travel.
When we see an increase in your department, you don't have to have heartburn over.
There will be an increase in our department and a decrease in their department.
Any full amounts, right? Thank you.
Further questions, Representative Lee?
We have 7 positions associated costs. Do you know what the costs are associated with this program in revenue right now?
Approximately $355,000.
Do you know what the revenues are that we receive as a state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, House Bill 299, which passed the legislature last year, increased the revenue source to cover the costs of running the gaming program and also gave to the program 5 additional positions. It set into statute a structure of a tax levied on pull tabs, and so far we've collected that tax for 2 months and raised $120,000 in those 2 months. Extrapolating that out, that's close to $720,000 a year, which would more than cover the cost of administering the program. However, I caution that those 2 months track record may not be indicative of an entire year. We did not estimate anywhere near that kind of revenue stream from the sale of pull tabs.
You're projecting at least a slightly positive cash flow, and it could be substantially positive. You have no reason to believe that it would be negative.
I don't think there's a chance in the world that it would be negative.
Well, good news. Hopefully. Labor and Commerce Committee again strikes a blow for balanced budgets.
Any further questions of the witnesses? Does Representative Grunberg have any questions? You know, he said he was going to be right back. I know he had concerns.
He indicated previously he might have some questions.
Would you go see with him? Because we're kind of at an impasse here. Is there any member of the public that would like to testify on this legislation and sign up? Okay. Well, I guess we'll wait for to see if Max is.
We're in an executive session.
Representative Grunberg, I just wanted to make sure if you had any questions,
I'm sorry.
You had the opportunity to
some things to
ask the department.
I had one question that relates to Section 8 of the proposed executive order. And the bill was, which Representative Donnelly's committee took up last year, involved a great deal of time and care and coordination with the Department of Revenue. And I understand that they are in the process of promulgating regulations, and they're very extensive regulations. I'm concerned from the points of view of the operators, whether this is going to then involve the operators gearing up for one set of regulations and then transferring to the Department of Commerce for a different set of regulations. Have the two departments coordinated their regulations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunberg, at this point the comprehensive regulation draft is not completed within the Department of Revenue. At the point that it is, we will be communicating with the Department of Commerce and the intended director of occupational licensing where that program is going to go. I can answer your question. I'm not sure that that it would make good policy sense for one department to come right behind another and completely change the regulations. And I know that the hearings will be with great participation from the gaming community, and whatever form they finally take will have, there will be give and take. We will come up with a consensus. And I guess I would suspect the Department of Commerce will take great interest in those regulations as they develop.
In the past, I have not seen any executive orders that were at all controversial or involved anything quite like this with respect to these particular difficult regulations that are issues of first impression around here. And I could see this thing working very well. I could also see potential problems arising. And the legislature has, as I understand it, 60 days to disapprove this, or it goes into automatic effect. What is your target date for the promulgation of your regulations?
At this point, Representative Groomberg, we have target date for release of the draft, and that's the end of this month. So we're talking about a week. I'm not sure we'll make that target. It may be a week or two before the management within the department has had a chance to completely review the draft. At that point, they'll be made public for public comment. It would be very difficult for me to speculate when they would be promulgated. Our target would be the end of May, so there will be a place before the transfer.
My second question, Mr. Chairman, relates to the positions. Have people been hired to fill those positions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Groomberg, 6 of the 7 positions have been filled.
What will happen to those people? Will they go to the other department, or will they lose their jobs?
They will go to the other department.
And that's already understood?
Yes.
Questions? Will of the committee?
Is there anybody else who wants to testify? I don't hear anybody saying they're concerned about the regulations issue. And unless I heard somebody saying it, I'm not going to assume that that's the problem.
And I haven't, there's no one signed up to testify. I'll ask one more time, is anyone here from the public who wishes to testify on this legislation? President Boucher,
I'm going to get this on its way.
Might as well.
Move out of committee, executive order.
We do a reverse motion on this, don't we?
I believe that the motion is that the committee chooses not to object.
All right. I choose it.
I move that the committee not object to the executive order 74.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee not object to executive order 74.
Discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, motion carries.
Thank you.
And that was the last order of business we had on the calendar.
Call the clerk real quick and find out how this gets signed.
Okay. We're all signed over there. Yeah, I understand. Well, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn the meeting, but I'd like the members to stick around and find out if they have a sign.
I've got enough.